When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You ever been to Dawn?
No.
I have. The Dawnish are crazy. All they want to do is fight and fuck, fuck and fight.
You should be happy to go back then.
There's nothing like a good fight to get you in the mood for fucking. And there's nothing like a fuck mad Dawnish girl to clear your head for the next fight.
Everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Karen.
And I'm David.
And I'm Mr. Blog.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 8.
Hey, David, how you doing?
Today, we're welcoming our fifth member of our Game of Microphones podcast gang, David.
Welcome. Nice to be here. I kind of felt like the whole history of Westeros had gone by since I've last appeared on this podcast.
I tend to agree with you. I was kind of like, wait, Dave, who's David? What's this person that's going to be on the show? I don't understand what's on this agenda. Oh, that's right. Mr. Karen. Okay, that's who that is.
Mr. Karen.
I think he was on that Walking Dead cast show. A
couple times. Yeah, something like that. How you guys doing?
Super. And we have a jam-packed episode for everybody. We're going to talk about the top five responses to yesterday's episode. We're going to then go into listeners' responses. We're going to bring you a little bit of news and calls and emails. Then Mr. Blog and David are going to go off and talk about the books. And I'm going to creep into the other room so I don't hear and get spoiled.
Putting you in the box.
Exactly. The nice thing is that with our podcast, it's split into chapters. So any part you want to skip ahead, you can absolutely do that. So that's how our podcast is built. So with that, I say we should just jump right in. And what did y'all think of this week's episode?
Just going to say, I thought it was awesome. Really compelling episode. A lot of drama, a lot of action. The show has taken a turn this season out of sort of the tighter storylines, and it's becoming a little more far-flung and a little more chaotic, and it's just absolutely excellent.
That's a great way to put it. It really has become pretty far-flung and chaotic, hasn't it? Like, we've seemed to have lost the center that things were, which I think was the war for the throne, and now we're in kind of a very different sort of realm.
It feels really different, but it's great. Did you rate it at all, Eric?
No, I decided not to rate it. It seems that, you know, Grace and Jason have been stepping back from it. So I don't know. I mean, I could with maybe, you know, bump it up just a little from last week and say 4.52. I'm going up like a hundredth of a point every time.
4.52 is pretty strong. I'd give it about that myself. I would give it 4.52 sand snakes. Out of 5.
Nice.
Oh, yeah,
very
exactly.
Nice. And I'm a little below you guys, but I'm a tough grader. I gave it 4.45 buried ship captains being threatened by scorpions.
And sand snakes.
Yeah, that's a lot lower. That's pretty tough, David. You're really being harsh on the show.
I should say also for our viewers that Mr. Blog and David have read the books. I've only read the first one, but Mr. Blog and David have read all of them, anything that's written so far. So they can offer a completely different perspective than I can. And I can't wait to hear what you guys think.
We will be tucking away those particular perspectives until we get to book talk. I mean, I want our listeners to know we're going to be very good about that. I want to try to chat about things that simply happen on the show. And then David and I can have fun once we get to book talk.
So David,
agreed.
Since you're the newest, why don't you go first?
So we're into our top five. Indeed. For the Sons of the Harpy. My top five, and you're going to regret asking me to go first because I know I'm taking one of your top fives because it always is. But, my top five in this episode was Tyrion Lannister. Mm. And his clever wit is back. He spent a couple episodes just sort of being drunk and pathetically making his way around the land. But now it seems like being kidnapped has brought out the best in him, and his cleverness has resurfaced. And he pretty much figured out Jorah Mormont's whole deal and managed to piss him off inside of about 2 minutes.
Wasn't
which was
that
awesome.
Great? It was very yeah. Sherlock Holmesy, don't you think?
It was.
It was
great. Yeah.
And I love that he just led with what a waste of a good kidnapping, and it's sort of he had the advantage from there.
We're going to the same place.
Yeah, and Jorah Mormont, very, very serious. Very serious people, I think, have trouble dealing with Tyrion. So I enjoy. He wasn't in it very much, but I really enjoyed that scene in
yeah,
the boat.
I completely agree with you. It was a wonderful scene. And there he is on the boat heading for Meereen. And I can't wait for the next episode when he arrives. I mean, theoretically.
And I loved how much of an asshole he was being. Even though he's gagged, he's like, I'm going to annoy the hell out of you until you remove this from my mouth. that would be so annoying.
I think one small criticism, actually, I have of the show is that they are moving very quickly. And I think they could do a little better job on the geography because it's easy to get lost just where we are at any point and where these places are in relation to each other, how far apart they are.
Yeah.
I think that I'm not sure how you would do it other than the animated map that's in the credits, but sometimes it gets a little confusing.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah. I've consulted a map more than one time with this show to find out just where the heck I am and where I'm going. And there's a lot of different maps out there and I'm not sure how accurate they are. I don't know if is there one master map that you can consult?
Yes. I mean, they're in the books.
Oh yeah. You know,
every single book has the general map of Westeros, then a couple of other maps that maybe focus in on some areas that are highlighted in that book. So I think every book has at least two or three different maps in there. Today, I found a wonderful thing. A friend of mine sent it to me, and I think it came out of Reddit, where somebody had taken, God, I think it was 14 different maps, maybe 12 or 14 of maps of Westeros, but then plotted a line for each character where they've traveled throughout the whole thing.
Oh,
but,
cool.
But did not label it. You had to guess who each one was based on where they've been. It was a lot of fun. A couple of friends of mine at work, we had a blast going through it. And it's something else to see who has gone where. My favorite one was the easiest one was a straight line from Winterfell to King's Landing. That was it. I'm like, oh, it's Ned Stark. Okay. You know, so it kind of went like that.
Oh, how sad. Yeah.
Exactly. So Tyrion's, however, was really the most far-reaching.
Yeah.
Because he will, you know, immediately meet him in Winterfell, but then he goes to the Wall and then back down to King's Landing and he did some other things and now where he's at now. It's taken him, he's gone on quite a journey.
And he went up to the...
Yeah, before...
Oh, and the Eyrie, that was there as well. Absolutely. Yeah. Arya was pretty good. Hers was all over the place. A few of the characters have gone far and wide. And it's fun. And then I could tell the difference between Dany and Jorah. And they incorporated last night's episode into this because Jorah makes a U-turn. You see exactly where it makes a U-turn.
Do you, do you see him carrying Tyrion?
It's not quite that detailed.
Okay, Eric, you're next. What's your number five?
Well, my number five, I've been going with kind of a thematic thing for my number five over the last couple of weeks. I talked about identity and then transformation. Well, this week, I felt what we got a really great sense of that we've maybe been missing for a while is a sense of history. And in this episode, there were a few points, and I don't want to get into too many details yet because it'll be coming up later. But we got a lot of little bits of history through the whole thing, and not just far-reaching history, but also just history within the show, beginning at the very beginning with Jaime seeing Tarth. And that wonderful look on his face, reminiscing about that. But we had two different people talking about Rhaegar Targaryen.
Yep.
You know, once in Littlefinger talking to Sansa in relation to Lyanna and what happened at Harrenhal way back when he gave her the Wreath of Roses. And then again by Sir Barristan Selmy telling Dany about how wonderful Rhaegar was, and he would go into the streets and play music and just get to know the people. So we get this wonderful sense of somebody that is almost this ghost that has been a shadow over the entire series, yet we don't know enough about. And I'm really happy the way they are presenting that information, and specifically when they are. It's kind of telling. And then, of course, you get some other – they've talked about Stone Men now twice in two episodes, subsequent episodes. They've talked about Grayscale in the last three episodes. And they put this all into historical context, in addition to Stannis talking to Shireen and her history and these kinds of things. So I really felt that they paid a lot of wonderful attention in this episode to the past and to what brought them where they're at.
And we also got a tantalizing little tidbit that about the Faith Militant and how
exactly
they disarmed 200 years ago.
That was the other one that I wanted to mention. Yeah. So this one felt very informed by the past and the way that's, you know, lately I think we've moved away from, you know, there's a lot of world building in the first couple of seasons. We've moved away from that because we understand this world, but now I think they're beginning to fill us in on some of these to maybe inform how the past is weaving its threads through the present.
Well said. And it's, they're creating the web that ties all of these worlds together now.
Mm-hmm.
And my number five actually sort of builds on what you're talking about there. So the theme of presenting history in a real background for a lot of these things. There are a lot of parallel storylines through the show. So a lot of things going on, a lot of the webs now, you can see common threads in some places. So for instance, you have the religious nut jobs in Meereen, the Sons of the Harpy, and you also have religious zealots at King's Landing, right? So you have this show really focused on the zealots in both those places. And then
I'm going to throw one.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to throw, as far as zealots are concerned, last week we saw the Red Priestess in Volantis.
Yep.
And of course we have Melisandre as well. So you have another end of the religious zealotry going on.
Right. Exactly. So you have zealots in all these places. That's a common thread. One other common.
And they're all quite different.
They really are.
In what they're, zealotry is about. Like, you could argue that the Sons of the Harpy, while religiously based nominally, really have more secular aims.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sparrows seem the most purely religious.
Theirs is one of piety. And
yes.
And then you got Melisandre. She's just down to fuck and wants to make another shadow baby. So that's a whole other thing entirely.
But she believes in the Lord of Light. You know, she is a true believer in the Lord of Light, and she can do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Well, and as I've said in the past,
but less
on this
a
show,
question of piety for her and more the practicality of fighting the war that the Lord of Light is involved in.
Right.
In fact, I mentioned this last week. R'hllor is the one god that's like showing up and doing stuff.
Yes.
So
yeah,
she's not just going on blind faith. I mean, I got to say, she's going on like, nope, look, proof.
Yeah.
These things happen, you know, and Davos was present at the birth of the last shadow baby. Oh, yeah.
Shadow baby.
Things happen, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Another common thread, Lannister brothers, both in boats, sailing towards uncertain
nice.
Lands
okay.
they've never been before.
Nice.
Rhaegar was mentioned in two places separately. One in Winterfell by Littlefinger. He was talking about Rhaegar, gave him the history. And then in Meereen, Barrister Selmy. Selmy talking to Daenerys about, you know, the history. Both presenting sort of completely different pictures of Rhaegar. One is Rhaegar, the sweet, kind guy that just wanted to sing. That's all he really wanted to do, is go out and sing. And then Rhaegar...
no singing.
And then Rhaegar, the guy who really got Sansa's aunt and raped her.
Well, now let me ask you this. Did you catch who it was that Rhaegar Targaryen beat in the joust at Harrenhal?
No.
It was Ser Barristan Selmy.
Oh.
Now, Ser Barristan, I don't know how much they've made a point in the show. I mean, they did very early on. I know they made a point of this early on. I would hope that people would remember. He is considered the greatest swordsman in all of Westeros.
Yes, I agree with you that where you're going to where the implication is he lost on purpose or at least let him win.
No, I'm actually not going with that. No, I'm not going with that. Actually, what I'm going with is, okay, strip away what you think you believe, you know, Sansa's immediate reaction of he kidnapped and raped, you know, her aunt. It's pretty harsh.
Yeah.
But everything you actually hear about Rhaegar, he sounds like a really great guy.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to start thinking in terms of like, wait a minute, what do we think we understand about this guy versus what is the reality? Did you notice Littlefinger's face when Sansa said, and then he kidnapped and raped her? You know, Littlefinger's like, eh.
You know? Really? That's interesting. Well, he was also going to put the rain down the fire upon everybody. I mean, Jaime Lannister said that too, right?
That was the Mad King. That was Aerys.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. It can be very confusing because we haven't really we haven't talked about the Targaryens in a while. You know, we got some little history. Again, we've got a lot of history and world building in the first couple of seasons, but since then, we haven't gotten that much. So I know, David, you were probably very excited to start hearing more about Rhaegar.
We haven't heard much about, I caught that same comment that you did about him winning the joust and Ser Barristan. And we haven't heard that much about Rhaegar as a fighter. We know that he was slain on the Trident. That's about all we know. And we can assume he was a good fighter. He's one of these elite knights like these other guys. But
I love that Selmy said he hated to fight. He didn't even like fighting.
Yeah, he wanted to
sing. He was just good
right.
at it.
So where he stood in that whole pantheon. And I love the sword fighters anyway, because I guess to me it's the most sports-like aspect of this whole thing. They should have trading cards. But, each guy has his own style, and I kind of want to rank them in my mind. It's exciting.
All right, I have two more quick little parallels. One is women in charge are losing their advisors. So Cersei sends away her guys, and then... of course, Daenerys at the very end loses a few of her loyal advisors, which is very, very sad.
Well, so, and she did send away Jorah. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, and she loses. Yeah, but that's earlier on. But this episode, everybody loses. I mean, Cersei's actually kind of happy. She's at the very end thinking, I'd be just, I can run this place by myself.
What was that great totally line fine. That Maester Pycelle said? You know, the small council is getting smaller. And she says, like,
Not small enough.
I love that. It's like, oh, man. There's two other people in the room, you crazy woman. What are you talking about?
And then, yeah, exactly. Then at the very end, two fights happening, one on the beach in Dorne and one in Meereen. So, which is great. And we can talk about that later. Sorry, that was a really long one. David, you're number four.
All right, I'll keep it short. My number four is... Jamie's killer move to catch the sword of his assailant with his metal hand.
Awesome.
He was probably as surprised or more surprised than his opponent.
Well, it was pure instinct.
It was awesome.
Man.
And yeah. I think his trading card became quite a bit more valuable with that move.
You know, the golden hand of Lannister or something. That was awesome. And I love the way, even Bronn ends like, you had a good teacher. It's like, no, I got lucky, man. He just, that was instinct to save his ass, was to put his hand up. But now he better use that golden hand a lot more in battle. I want to see him using that thing as a weapon. You know,
you could smack around somebody. You could poke their eyes out.
Get it out of an open hand. Make a golden one in a fist. You know, then he can really use it.
This is
one realistic detail of this story I really love that, I think in some lesser shows or lesser stories, they'd have him heroically learn to fight with his other hand. And And it ain't happening. He sucks with his left hand.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, he barely got through that duel by being lucky, basically.
And also, speaking of reality, the fact that the sword would then embed itself into his hand, that was fantastic. That he had a little trouble getting it off. Damn it. Gold's malleable. You know, not the best metal to necessarily use in battle.
But they probably don't have titanium in Westeros.
Well, Valyrian steel, but I don't think they're going to make a hand out of it.
Actually, they should. They should have melted down a sword and given him a Valyrian steel.
Not enough Valyrian steel in the world for that. They really worship those swords. So. And the Lannisters just got Valyrian steel, and Jaime went and gave it away to Brienne.
Right,
that was a huge deal.
So sweet. He loved her. By the way, when blog that I read said that they should rename Jaime. Instead of Kingslayer, name him Swordcatcher. It's pretty good, right? And by the way, how great was it that Bronn saved Jaime from getting bit by a snake in the sand?
I mean, that was great. Yeah.
Which is awesome. Exactly. Because it's sort of a foreshadowing of the sand snakes that know now that he's there.
Yeah, I think they're just basically also trying to tell us Dorne is like Australia. Everything will kill you.
Including scorpions. Gross.
Oof, yeah.
Okay, so Eric, you're
number four. Stannis's reluctant hug and his wonderful chat with Shireen. That was probably the most humanizing moment that we've ever had for Stannis Baratheon. And I loved the whole talk that he had with Shireen explaining, you know, she is what he will fight for. You know, maybe you've always wondered what is Stannis necessarily fighting for. And for somebody who's been so cold to his family, now you kind of get it. And it was a beautiful moment. And I loved how awkward he was when Shireen goes to give him that hug. And his arms are just hanging at his side like, I don't know what to do. I guess I'll do the same. You know, and eventually does it, which was great. So as a dad, I loved that moment.
Yeah, did you feel it? That's so sweet.
Oh, I did, because he is not, you know, when you say the word sweet, really, Stannis is not the first thing that pops into my head.
But he's really nice with his daughter, and which is good, because finally, she could use all the help she can get. Her mom is a freak show.
Pretty horrible.
Oh, my God, that woman. All right, my turn?
Yeah.
All right, so my number four is... To me, this weekend, the real fight was not Mayweather versus Pacquiao. To me, the real fight this weekend was Cersei versus Margaery.
Oh,
this week,
nice.
It got ugly, and it is on. At first, I thought, wow, Margaery really seems to be holding her own against Cersei. And boy, she's really, you know, she's going to win this fight, and she's going to make Cersei go running. I bet that's what's going to happen. Ha! I should have known better and known what Cersei had planning, because this week it was just ugly. So Cersei this week maneuvers so that Loras, Margaery's brother, is imprisoned for being gay. And Mace Tyrell, who is Master of Coin and their father, is basically shipped off to the Iron Bank of Braavos. So, pretty much, Margaery is on her own because, let's face it, the king is not going to help her. He's so cute. He's such a little boy.
And Tommen was in such a bad position in this episode. I felt so bad for the kid, you know?
Yeah, aren't you and mother getting along?
Yeah.
No, we're not.
I need to go spend time with my family. It's like, ooh.
You're not coming back later? A little afternoon, you know, delight? Nope.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was very interesting about this whole thing is that we're really seeing Cersei now without Tywin. And she is as cunning and amoral as ever she was, but she doesn't have the discipline of Tywin behind her. And so she got a little advantage there over Margaery with her shenanigans, but she actually kind of undermined the king, her own son, because he was in a position to be shown weak. And that's the first time that revealed how much weaker the Lannisters really are without Tywin.
That's exactly right. And by the way, if Cersei thinks that she can unleash the power of those zealots and have nothing happen later, if she thinks she can bottle that up later when she needs to, she is sadly mistaken. Once the genie's out of that bottle, she better be prepared, because they get a taste of the power and they're not going to give it up. So great. Yay. Now you're making the zealots have all this power, Cersei, but I think it's going to spell trouble for her later on. That's my opinion.
Nice.
All right, David, you're number three.
My number three is the Sand Snakes. Sort of been waiting to see them, and they mean business. they are not screwing around.
No.
I mean, that ship captain was clearly the zombie kill of the week.
Yeah.
To mix my metaphors. And one thing Westeros really needs, a whole other group of crazy belligerent people. And that's what they're bringing
to the mix. I got
to
say.
I'm pretty excited they're in the mix now.
As am I, but I got to say, that poor ship captain. Here, this guy willingly gives up all this information, and they still see fit to torture him and then throw a spear into his head. What the hell did that poor guy do, man? He gave up the info.
It must be.
Well, but he infiltrated Jaime into Dorne. So I think he's Pentoshi.
He has no, reason not to, and he got a giant bag of gold. I don't know. It just seemed a little extra cruel.
By the way,
a remarkably cruel show.
Who doesn't love hot chicks in skimpy clothing, wielding weapons and out for vengeance? Okay.
Now about that, I do have to say, Ibarra, she's got her spear. Nim's got the whip, but Tyene, the youngest, the one who's actually Ilaria's daughter. I don't know who that actress is. I really hope she's of age when I say this, but oh my God, that girl is gorgeous. I was just like, looking at her. That girl is beautiful. So I really appreciated her presence on the show.
skimpy clothing, wielding hot chicks. It's pretty great.
Say no more. Yeah.
All right.
Goes very well into my number three, which was Sand Snakes.
Yep.
There you have it. I agree everything with what David just said. I think they're a fantastic presence on the show. They are going to add an extra special little bit of spice to the show. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
So, by the way, I'm not sure what the relevance of this really is, but in researching this episode, I came across this supposedly Sicilian proverb. We keep an eye on the scorpion and the serpent, but we do not watch out for the millipede.
Weird.
I'm not sure who the millipede is in this.
Yeah, I'm like
in this setting, but there definitely were serpents and scorpions.
there most certainly were.
Oh, by the way, did you guys notice that this was the first appearance of Dorne on the intro? During the theme music, they finally showed Dorne on the map, and it was very cool. And now the town that they're in is actually Sunspear, so it is funny they just call it Dorne. This is the first time they're just naming a city the entire region, because it's basically another country, but whatever. I thought it was really cool. And what was great was they focused in, you know, how everything seems to have a bit of a pillar, or at least some focal feature in the opening. It was a giant serpent.
Oh, sweet.
That's what made it think, like spinning up along a tower. It's really quite beautiful.
How did I miss
that? Yeah, it was neat.
It must have been when I was drinking my beer.
Happens. I got my wine.
And actually, that was my number three also, was the Sand Snakes. So, David, back to you. What's your number two?
Whew, good thing I got to go first. My number two was what I'm calling Sir Barristan Selmy's final song, dying what he does best with sword in hand. Sing a song for me, Sir Barristan, said Daenerys, and indeed he did.
Aww.
Poetry in motion.
Beautiful. That was hard. That was rough. I like to think that he went out exactly the way an old warrior would want to go out.
Agreed. You know? I think that's the way. That's the way somebody as great as him with the sword, his life should end.
No, exactly. And it was, you know, he did that saving Grey Worm. I don't believe Grey Worm is dead. I think he is still alive. I do believe.
Oh God, I hope
Selmy
so.
Selmy is still. I think he is dead. That was brutal. I mean, he got one hell of a beat down, but he still managed to keep fighting just right up until the end.
Yep. Yeah.
It was a great death, a very unexpected death. He almost got a bit of a Walking Dead death in the fact that he had a wonderful little chat with Danny just beforehand. You know, sort of like, I'm at the height of things. Things are wonderful. I'm going for a walk.
You know, when that little chat happened, by the way, I thought, oh my God, he's doomed. He's doomed.
He's
and then
too
I thought,
happy. Oh,
then
no.
I thought, no, that's the Walking Dead. They don't do that in this show.
No, they just kill everybody in this show, whether you're having a good day or a bad day.
Yes, by coincidence, some of them have happened to have chats before they go.
This is true. Yes, exactly. But it did make me think of that.
It was funny that when Danny was talking to him, she was looking down over the balcony. And, you know, from this height, way, way up here, everyone looks really happy. What's the problem? There doesn't seem to be any problem from up here, 1,000 miles away, looking down.
Well, and that was also speaking, you know, you talked about the parallels going on. You know, she had that kind of clueless thing. And then you get Tommen going into Fleabottom to go talk with the Sparrows.
Yes.
You know, he had people shouting at him, abomination, bastard, all these things.
Right.
Which is like, well, he's a little kid. He's up, man. You know, but he's their king.
He's their king.
And they know the truth. You know, that's the ugly thing about all this. Even Bronn had to turn to Jaime and be like, your niece.
Did he make air quotes?
He must. You know, he was. I could hear it in his voice, air quotes in his voice. It was fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, that's rough, man. You just hit him in a bad spot.
So what's your number two?
Well, speaking of Jaime and Bronn, Jaime and Bronn and their entire adventure was my number two, beginning with Jaime looking fondly upon Tarth. Going into the little clip that I played right at the beginning of this particular episode of Bronn discussing what Dorne is all about, fucking and fighting, and just everything. You know, just the fact that Jaime seems to really have in mind the way that he believes things are going to go. Bronn goes and tells him exactly how things are going to end up going. That comes to fruition. And then later on, I mean, all the little things about Bronn wanting him to help Roe. He just holds his hand up. You know, Jaime says we're going to bury these people. He holds his hand up. It's hard to dig with one hand. You know, so poor Bronn is in a pretty crappy position right now where he's able to make all these great quips. He's able to make, you know, be a great fighter and all these things. However, he still has to dig a grave. He still has to row Jaime's boat. You know, there is still that level of hierarchy going on of the two of them, yet there seems to be a genuine affection between them. I really enjoy the two of them together. I think it's fantastic.
Do you think that Jaime is really as mad at Tyrion as he claims to be, that he's really gonna split the little guy in two as he claims?
I don't know. It's his little brother. It's hard to say. You know, he loves his brother, but at the same time, his little brother killed their dad. So that's a tough call. I don't know.
David?
What do you think,
I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a hard time buying it. I don't think
he actually... First of all, it wasn't just Varys. You know,
no, it was him too.
It was him too. He was involved. And,
yeah. You
know, he had at best a complicated relationship with his father. He probably has mixed feelings about it, but I don't buy that his feelings were as simple as he expressed.
Yeah. Yeah. He's probably, and part of him is probably also just sort of parroting what Cersei says, because he is trying to get back in Cersei's good graces too.
And her pants.
And her pants. So my number two was the Sons of the Harpy fight. And so you guys said it very well, losing Barristan Selmy, terrible. And I hope not Grey Worm. That's all I wanted to add, is that he's such a lovable character and he's such a great fighter and he's so loyal. And I was thinking about the time when he was fighting, I was thinking about when he said that he wanted to keep the name Grey Worm because it was the name he had when he met Daenerys. And oh my God, how can you not love that? So I really, really hope that he's not dead. So that was
and moving away from the emotions of it, as you talked about, the fight itself.
Yeah,
it was awesome. Incredible. That was so cool. The way that they went about their whole massacre. You know, I don't know if you realize, but that prostitute that was obviously in on it.
Yes.
She was the same prostitute with the guy that the other Unsullied that they killed.
Yes.
The same woman. So, And they didn't really linger on that. You know, it's just like, nope, that's the same person. They didn't linger on it. They didn't make a big point of that, but it was there. So the way they went about it was brutal. It was harsh, and it was just so well done. And then to have all the Unsullied just being killed off in the way, I mean, bear in mind, the Unsullied are supposed to be some of the greatest fighters in all the land, and yet they were just being taken out. And then when you get to that one fight, you know, the end fight there, wow, that was phenomenally well choreographed. It was just beautifully filmed. I do like the fact, I mean, on one hand, I'm like, really? But on the other hand, I'm like, oh, thank goodness, that Grey Worm's helmet got knocked off so you can actually see who was fighting.
Yeah, right, right. Oh, my God, that's Grey Worm. No, yeah, I was but sad.
It made it a little less, oh, look, it's stormtroopers fighting Jawas. You know, just like people you can't even see who they are. it's kind of nice to put a face to who is fighting who. So that whole fight, I'm with you on that. That was just fantastic.
Stormtroopers fighting Jawas.
I just, for Sanka, think of covered faces, you know. Nerd. By the way, may the 4th be with you. Today is Star Wars Day, so.
I mean, and with you.
By the way, I just think of Grey Worm as Roland Gift, Fine Young Cannibals lead singer.
He drives me crazy.
You know, he looks exactly like
him. Doesn't he look like
him?
He does.
He does.
He does.
All right, what's your number one?
My number one is just how everything is spinning out of control. Nice. We've been trained to believe over the many years of the story that all the royal houses are all powerful. The Lannisters, even the Targaryens as represented by Dany and all her miraculous victories. And now that we see that other traditional forces are very difficult to overcome, as you pointed out, the religious zealots, the Sparrows, the Sons of the Harpy, all these reactionary forces in society working against these houses who feel that they are so powerful. And I think it shows a good feel in the story for politics, that really a lot of what works even in the world of Westeros and these other lands is old-fashioned politics.
Yeah.
Like Varys was practicing, like Littlefinger was practicing. And that when you put those things to the side, you turn out to be a good conqueror but a bad ruler. And that is what some of these people, including Dany, are turning out to be.
Yep, that's exactly right. I hope she can turn things around. I really do.
And it's great that you bring up Littlefinger, because here's a dude who is playing all sides against each other.
Yeah.
You know, he's got his fingers in the Bolton pot. Uh-huh. He's got his fingers in the Cersei pot. And I believe he has his fingers. Or what's the other pot he's got his fingers in? There's some
Stannis for sure.
Stannis, there was the other one. Pot. Absolutely, he does. Yeah. So, you know, no matter what happens, he's going to be able to go, no, I was with you guys the whole time.
And he controls the Eyrie.
But he's taken some bloody noses too. I mean, you get the idea. He's taking some risks. His brothel business is going downhill.
It's bad.
That's not good for that. Right? Yeah.
He does not seem invincible.
No.
But I think he's going to be siding with Cersei in this whole thing. So this is, I don't see him siding with the Tyrells at this point.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. All right, Eric, what's your number one?
The death of Sir Barristan Selmy.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that to death. So that is absolutely my number one. I thought that was a very impactful moment. So
yeah, that was good. For me, my number one, and we've talked about this a little bit too, is the mystery of Rhaegar Targaryen and who he was, and the fact that we got told wildly different stories this episode about who this guy was. Who do you believe? So I think it's great, and probably book readers know a lot more than I do, so don't spoil me, but I love it, and I can't wait to see how it all shakes out. So that's pretty much it.
Cool.
All right. Well, let's move on to listener responses. And David, you want to start?
I'll start. Rob Williams says, Jon Snow, I'm still in love. Melisandre, you know nothing. Jon Snow, that's what she said.
Oh, groan. Next one is from Christina Sowers. Oh, Tommen. Honeymoon is over before it started, and who knew Stannis was so warm and fuzzy on the inside?
Olivia Deck writes, I need a hug. All the book readers need to come together for one massive group hug. R.A.P. Barristan, the bold Selmy.
Indeed.
Tariq Laskar writes, this, I think, was Game of Thrones' most intrigue-packed episode yet. I am intrigued to know if you guys thought the same. The Sparrows and the Sons of the Harpy seem perfect agents of chaos, and the foreshadowing scene where Dany sends Ser Barristan out sent a chill down my spine. I will be spending the week wallowing in the uncertainty over Grey Worm and Ser Barristan's fate. Amid all the gloom, the scene with Shireen and Stannis was one of the loveliest I have seen on the show.
Agreed.
Hate to say, I think Miss Ser Barristan's fate might be spoken for, but that's just my opinion.
But that wasn't lovely, though. That was, whatever.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jason Weaver says, so Daenerys's quest for order and law appears to be even a bigger disaster than we first thought. Had she found the Sons of the Harpies in their beds and murdered them all without a trial immediately after the first incident, none of this would have happened. But that's not her style. Her style is the kind that cannot govern in Game of Thrones. That pathetic slave she beheaded deserved quick and deadly justice, but I suppose the Harpies did not.
Yeah, that's a good point. She's all over the place with her ruling. We'll see what happens.
Very good point.
Paik Allen writes, really enjoyed it, holding on to hope that Barristan and or Grey Worm can pull through and survive. But this show doesn't do well with hope.
Karen, I'm going to let you read the next one.
This is from Nick Quinto, who writes, fuckity fuck, not Ser Barristan, fuck. Well said, Nick.
Evan Brookman writes, very cool episode. There is a quote about tangled webs that seems appropriate for nearly every aspect of Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
Indeed. Caitlin Walker writes, Jon Snow can and will only ever love one redheaded lady. I am uncomfortable. Is Melisandre trying to make another shadow baby? Yes. Then she said it. No, why would you say that? Not okay. I believe she's making reference to You Know Nothing, Jon Snow. Jaime's attitude towards Tyrion, real or faux? Jaime needs Bronn, if not for the sword, then at least for the street smarts. Don't kill the horse. Why do they always kill the horse?
Because it's easy. That's an easy thing to do. Kill a horse, then you can kill the rider on the horse. That's why.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Meereen, Barristan Selmy pulled at The Walking Dead and became super cute and lovely right before he got killed off. Now, in all fairness, Ser Barristan was always cute and lovely.
All great points.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm adding that on there.
And I'm gonna I'm gonna weigh in with Caitlin and say that she was trying to make another shadow baby to take out Roose Bolton. That's my theory.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly why she was gonna make another shadow baby.
Well, if that's the case, go ahead and make a shadow baby. I mean, if it's to take out that guy, hell yeah. Am I alone here?
Well, I think I think you can't just have anybody make a shadow baby.
Really?
No, it has to be the blood of kings, was the impression
exactly.
I got.
Yeah. Oh. And now you notice she made that comment to Selyse saying, you know, Shireen, the blood of her father runs through her veins. You know, that was the whole thing. Remember the leeches way back when? It had to come from the blood of a king, right?
Right.
Gendry.
Gendry.
And we haven't seen Gendry. He's still off rowing somewhere.
I think we'll see him again. Yeah, he's still off rowing.
He's still rowing. He's like, have I gotten there yet? Fuck. I'm tired of rowing, man.
So she needs some king's blood. So,
well, why doesn't she just bone Stannis again?
He doesn't have the strength to do it again. She is what she said earlier.
Oh, she sapped all his vital power?
Exactly. Something it would like kill that. Him, yeah. is what she said to him.
She's quite a woman.
That's not quite the question you should be asking, but let's move on. I think we have one more here.
Okay. This comes from Jacob Evans, who writes, "My mind is absolutely blown with Melisandre's last line to Jon Snow. Clearly, that was no accident, so she must have been watching it in her flames. How else would Melisandre have known Jon was talking about a dead woman? Besides, didn't the wildlings always say that the redhead Ygritte was kissed by fire, and Melisandre worships the god of fire? I suspect Melisandre is more interested in Jon Snow than in Stannis. Could all this discussion of Rhaegar and Lyanna have anything to do with it? Not only was Littlefinger talking about it, but so was Barristan Selmy. This episode might as well have been titled R plus L equals J. Huh.
Hmm.
But Lyanna died, right?
She did, yeah.
Maybe you should save it for book talk.
Yeah, we can save this for book talk.
That's a good book talk topic. And I'm going to listen to book talk this week. Ha, so ooh. There. You guys can record it and I'll listen to it later. Okay. All right, are we done?
Yes.
Okay, so let's go to news about Game of Thrones. This first item comes from QZ.com, and the title is Game of Thrones has made mead super hip. So here it goes. Back in the days of yore, before craft beer wars and Chinese wine conglomerates, there was mead. According to the American Mead Association, the earliest references to mead, an alcoholic fermented honey beverage, came from the hymns of Rig Veda, a sacred Hindu text dating from somewhere between 4000 and 1500 BC. Mead was the drink of the deities, God as our priest, be thou the drink. The first to drink it, we give thee of the mead to make thee joyful. Isn't that great?
Whee!
So, yeah, joyful. Right? Exactly. So, but alas, the gods are fickle and mead later fell out of favor as sugar replaced honey as the primary sweetener. Wine and beer further pushed out its domination of the alcoholic beverage market. So, until recently. By every measure thus far, mead's popularity is rising. In its second annual mead industry report, apparently there is such a thing.
That's awesome.
The American Mead Makers Association found that in 2013, sales of mead went up 32% from the year before. In 2014, that number went up again to 42%. To put that in perspective, the same year, wine sales were up 6.3%, according to the Silicon Valley Bank wine report. And
okay, so by the way, the American Mead Association.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, isn't that great? Mead Makers Association, yeah.
Have either of you tried mead?
Yes. No, actually, I haven't. You have.
Yes, I have.
How is it?
What's it like?
It's kind of like it sounds like.
Mead-alicious?
Yeah, it's meat-alicious. It's honey-filled.
Oh,
but I don't remember anyone actually drinking mead in Westeros. Are they actually drinking mead? I thought they were drinking wine.
I know they drink a lot of wine.
Dornish wine, right?
Dornish gold is the Dornish wine. Then there's their red wines. And oh, no, there's a lot of wine.
Yeah, I don't remember them actually talking about mead. So not only has this... this mead fad taken off, it might all be based on a misunderstanding.
Now, in keeping it real, my wine consumption has increased by at least 6.3%. Actually, probably substantially, 32% probably is more accurate. So, you know, as you know, Lord Cornelius of House Blog, my family house motto is "In wine we trust." So, you know,
in vino,
I love
veritas.
My Pinot Noir. Absolutely. I was going to pour a glass and I realized, no, I still have half a glass. So, enjoy some wine.
I just hope the Mead Syndicate doesn't come after me for exposing the subterfuge.
Oh, honey. The Mead Conspiracy.
They wear robes. They wear robes. I know. And they ride mules or donkeys. So you know what? It's going to be a while before the Mead.
Meads are for fucking hobbits, not throners. Us throners drink wine, maybe a fine ale. Or the blood of the vanquished. One of the other.
That's delicious. Blood of the vanquished. This next story comes from Forbes.com. It's becoming clear Game of Thrones will end at season 7. Showrunners David Benioff and D.B. Weiss have previously hinted that 7 seasons is their dream length for Game of Thrones. This is in contrast to HBO itself, who have said that they would love to see at least 10 years of the show. God, that's a lot of podcasting. Given the events of the season so far, of season 5 so far, it's becoming clear that 7 seasons is the most realistic option, as the show is now flying through 2 books simultaneously. And to this point, it's taken Game of Thrones 4 seasons to get through 3 books, splitting a storm of Swords in half across seasons 3 and 4. After that, getting through 4 books, 2 unwritten, in 3 years seems impossible and overly ambitious. Now I'm not so sure. What's happening is that even though A Storm of Swords was 1,200 pages long, that was split into 2 seasons, Benioff and Weiss are taking A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons, 1,100 pages each, and turning them into essentially 1 season-long collection of storylines. So what do you guys think? Do you think that this writer's onto something? 7 seasons?
7 kingdoms, 7 gods.
7
all
books.
All makes sense. Yep.
7 seasons. It all makes sense. I think what this tells you more than anything else, and look, I apologize to people for this, but it should tell you about the quality of book 3, that they must split it into 2 seasons, versus the quality of books 4 and 5, which they're combining for 1.
Yeah, that says something, all right.
You know, look, agreed.
He needs a better editor.
A Storm of Swords was a remarkable book. And if he had ended the entire series after that one, would have been disappointing. But you know what? Could have stood on its own. These 2 books, Feast for Crows and Dance with Dragons. Look, good books, not knocking them. But, and David, how do you feel about, now, you know, Grace and I, we've been talking a little bit in our book talk, and we can bring this up. This is absolutely zero spoilers. I'm really happy with the direction the show's been taking as far as how they've streamlined these 2 books and cut out, you know, I mean, there's some elements I would really love to see in there, but they are maybe superfluous at this point.
I'm largely happy with the direction of the show. Yeah. I think there were a lot of tangents that were gone off on in those books for sure.
Yes, yes.
It worries me a little bit, though. I hope they don't hurry through it, because what's so great about this show, not only these books, but this television show, is the richness of the detail.
Yes.
And the details of the characters, and that you really get to know them. And there are some asides that aren't necessarily moving the plot fast forward. And I'm a little bit worried in this season that they are trying to move the plot fast forward, which could lead you to either race through some things, or it kind of makes them rely on some coincidences a little bit, like things have to happen fast and people are running into each other all the time. And I'm not saying this is a criticism yet, but it is a concern.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay, and that's it for news. Let's go to Raven's Calls.
Jason Weaver writes, in this episode, Ser Barristan has this sweet heart-to-heart with Daenerys about how her brother used to sing to the people. It was a tender, heartfelt moment, which kind of meant you knew he was doomed. Stannis also had this tender moment with his daughter, showing you his human side. We then had Baelish assuring Sansa that Stannis would take Winterfell and the North would be hers, which means, of course, something will go horribly wrong. Likely, the death of Stannis, or his daughter. I haven't read the books, no spoiler alert, just my guess. On the Walking Dead cast, you guys used to joke about how in Walking Dead, they always made you like people before they killed them, engaging in heavy foreshadowing, perhaps so the death of a major character wasn't such a surprise. It's kind of lazy writing that Game of Thrones has never suffered from, but it seems to be going that way now. I don't know if that's because they're past the books, but I really hope Game of Thrones isn't getting into that pattern. It takes the fun out of wondering who is going to get wiped out and who isn't.
Very nice. I got to throw out something we have completely missed the entire time. We did not talk about in our top five. We didn't go over any notes either. That was something I realized.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That kiss between Littlefinger and Sansa.
Creepy.
No.
She seemed kind of okay with it, man. I'm like, what the? Whoa, no.
You're her uncle.
No. No, she's not. Not really. But it's just creepy. Okay, whatever. That blew me away. That whole. Ew.
Yeah, I stole a glance over at Karen when that happened. And the look of disgust on her face would freeze a dragon in place.
I was not pleased.
Very well. All right, so next one comes from Drea Age. Ooh, this season is getting good, you guys. Haiku review for you. Snow tempted by fire.
Ooh.
Jaime wields his golden hand. Jorah steals the imp. Very nice.
Excellent.
Can't believe we lost the nice old man and Grey Worm. I'm hoping that's not permanent and they will recover from serious injuries. Oh, Cersei, have you learned nothing? You know nothing, Cersei Lannister. This scheme is going to end up biting you in the ass and getting yet another of your bastard children killed. Unlike Joffrey, this one does not deserve
it. No, he doesn't.
Can't wait to hear your thoughts on this week. Love your show and looking forward to six more awesome weeks. Be sure to wear plenty of wolf skins today, for winter is coming.
Thanks, Drea. That's great. Okay, this one comes from Jim Humesleen, who writes, greetings. It occurred to me that your most obvious sign-off phrase should be winter is coming. Of course, you can customize it for your podcast, such as don't forget to bundle up, winter is coming, or start knitting that scarf, winter is coming. Jim in New Jersey, where our long winter has finally seemed to have passed. Yay! Happy summer. Summer is coming, Jim.
Yeah, it is.
That was definitely a great suggestion.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that. Michael Harding writes, hey gang, another great episode. As a rating, I would have to say 4.5 angry sparrows. Poor Jon Snow, he still knows nothing. Melisandre just wants to make shadow babies. I love the fact that they finally showed that Stannis has a heart, that he truly loves his daughter. As for a podcast closer, don't trust Littlefinger.
That's good.
Mike of House Harding, Sigil, a pit bull in green grass. Aww. Words, we are lovers, not fighters.
Oh,
wow, chicka, wow, wow.
That's so cute. Okay, so now we have our call section.
Hey, Game of Throners, this is Bill from New Hampshire. Just wanted to call in your podcast and thank you for doing it. I love it. It's great to hear you guys recap the Game of Thrones stuff. I want to call and gripe a little bit, though. I listen to the audiobooks, I watch the show, and I absolutely love the books. And as much as I like what's happening in the show, I just feel like a frustration and a bit of a disconnect from, you know, from the storyline and what's happening in the show. And it's, you know, since it's been a little while since I've read the book, sometimes I kind of forget some of the characters, and then I'm watching the show and I'm like, gee, I don't think that's what those characters did. And I'm confused at why they're actually taking this approach. Why it feels like they're just rushing through the show, for some reason. Like, I know there's a lot of exposition in the book that they could have trimmed out, a lot of, you know, meals and things that we don't need to hear in excruciating minutia, but it feels like they're cutting so much out, and now they're cutting corners and changing the story, and, like, what's the point anymore? It feels strange to me, and it feels like it becomes two completely separate things, so, you know, I know you guys seem to really love the direction it's going, and to a certain extent I do as well, but I almost wish I had read the book, but I'd probably enjoy it more. Just feeling a bit of frustration. But regardless, I'm going to continue watching and continue listening to you guys, and I think you're doing a great job. So that's it. Thanks. Well, I'm the first caller. If not, it's okay to do. Bye.
Oh, thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate that. I'm going to go ahead and answer this real quick. Respond. There's no answer to what you're saying other than, you know, that's always going to be an issue when you have any sort of adaptation from a book into a movie or to a TV show. You're going to have to, you know, I think you just have to, there's a little give and take with that. And unfortunately, the two different media are very, very good at doing different things. You know, you can do certain things in a book that you cannot do in a TV show or you cannot do in a movie. And unfortunately, these books, oh my God, if they tried to actually really go moment by moment into a TV show, this would last about, I don't know, 40 seasons or something. It would take forever to get through. So I think it's a matter of dealing with the attention spans of a TV watcher versus that of a book reader. And I think they're just simply two different worlds. I mean, what do you think about that, guys?
No, it's a good point. They're two very different media, and I think they've done a great job of keeping the show entertaining. But I sympathize with Bill's concern, and I said that earlier. As they change the story more and more, I think the producers didn't feel the freedom to do that at the beginning when the story is so plotted with such complexity that there almost was no way to make serious changes and have the thing hold together. But as the story gets more chaotic and less tight, they seem to be feeling more freedom to make changes. And I hope they're as good at developing a story as the original story was.
Yeah, sounds about right to me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call, Bill. Appreciate it.
Oh, by the way, Bill was our first call. So, Woo! Yay, Bill from New Hampshire.
Big.
You are the first call to Game of Microphones.
Major props.
Yeah, major props. And, you know, a couple of spears and maybe a trident for you. So, enjoy. All right.
And a golden hand.
Yes, exactly. Next up, we have Book Talk. And actually, that call was a pretty great introduction to your Book Talk. So I'll leave it to you guys. Take it away, David and Eric.
David, man, what did you think of this? We're kind of in the weeds at this point. Book talks are going to get shorter and shorter and shorter because we're getting really far away from it, man.
They are. The show has gone farther away from the books than I ever thought it would.
Yeah.
Not saying that's good or bad. I think in some ways it's good. You know, it's moving the action forward and they're connecting some characters that didn't connect in the books.
Yeah.
Which I think is great. You know what's the best thing about it as a viewer is that through the whole first several seasons of this show, I always kind of had the feeling I knew what was going to happen next. And this television show is so compelling and so well done it really didn't matter.
Nope.
It was great to see how they did it and how it was going to be performed and how it was going to be orchestrated. But now, as we get into it, books 4 and 5 were very long with a lot of characters and a lot of pages and very complex. And my memory's starting to fade as they change the story, either subtly or otherwise, in the show.
Now, I find it interesting.
Go ahead.
Well, my memories of books 1 through 3 are, and now you read them multiple times, so I'm sure for you they're much more solid. I read all books just once. But I feel like my memories of books 1 through 3, because as you've said before, that story was so tight, feel much more cemented in my brain than anything that happened in books 4 and 5, with a few very key exceptions. So the way they're doing this now, it's like I'm kind of okay with it, only because, like you're saying, my memory is a little hazy on certain details because we had so many new introduced characters during book 4 and 5. It was really hard to keep track of. I mean, we could just go on and on about the list of characters they've excised from this now. Starting with John Connington, Aegon Targaryen, some of the sand snakes that just aren't even there. Oh my God. And Manderleys. I don't think we're going to see a Manderley as far, you know, ever. Aerys Okart. I mean, there's so many characters that are just not present.
Yeah, I like the whole Aerys Okart story, but I think to get the buddy movie that is Jaime Lannister and Bronn, you had to do away with Aerys Okart. Lady Stoneheart, a major loss so far from the show that was...
That's a huge loss.
Intriguing, which of course, if not frequently seen character in the books, but it's certainly a compelling one.
You know, and one of the big things also is because of the lack of Lady Stoneheart, we have Brienne on a very different sort of mission now. And I'm liking this change by bringing... So, and I understand Benioff and Weiss, they've actually talked publicly now about why they're doing Sansa's storyline the way that they're doing, is that, yes, they may have had a Jane Poole in like season one, but she's not been a character since then. So by eliminating the fake Arya Stark, Jane Poole storyline, they decided to go with a character that viewers are already invested in. And because of that investment, they would care more. I think it works out really well to streamline all these things into this one.
Yes, it has a lot of great potential, and I'm really eager to see where they're going to go with all these things. And, you know, for television, this medium we've talked about, it's the story has to move forward. It can't be all rumination and description. There's got to be action and plot development. And a lot of the changes that the writers have made allows for that.
And I mean, and then we get into, okay, so some of the little details about the differences of the book and the show. I mean, Tommen has aged up, so Margaery is able to shag him. So therefore, Cersei is not able to pull this, oh my God, she's not a virgin. So therefore, that's why she got the Faith Militant on her. Instead, they go after Loras. And Loras' story has already been changed because he's not scarred up and in a bad shape right now. So that makes sense.
It does. I think all of the changes so far they hold together, and the challenge will be as the complicated ends of the threads tie together is can those things hold together?
Yeah.
But the Dany story
now
seems to be, to me, hewing the most closely to where George R.R. Martin wrote it. And that seems to be going in the exact direction that we're accustomed to in the fourth and fifth book.
With the exception of Ser Barristan Selmy's death.
True, and that's an important, certainly an important detail, but I don't know if it changes the arc of where she's going to...
No, I don't think it changes at all. Actually, I think it lands a good exclamation point on her storyline in the show that the book maybe lacked a little bit.
You and know, I think I that's going to
be a good thing on that.
Right, and I keep waiting for the Hisdar Zolorak connection to Dany to be explored a little further.
Yeah.
And so far, he hasn't been anything but sort of someone who shows up at court and whom they make fun of. So I think that development's got to be coming soon at the pace with which they're moving.
Well, I think so. And I think they're going to use that as a way to pacify the Sons of the Harpy in one way or another. So that's an interesting one. So we got Barristan Selmy, Sansa. That's a big difference. I'm assuming Bronn is going to be the stand-in for Aerys Okart, and Bronn is going to end up dying. You know, Melisandre never explicitly came on to Jon in the same way in the books. She did say
It makes a lot of sense, but it didn't happen that way.
No. So that's a little bit different. But again, it makes a lot of sense. Stannis and Shireen, there certainly never was any sort of lovely moment like they had in this show. That never happens in the book, that's for sure.
No, and I would say that's been a contrast I've noted since the very beginning of Game of Thrones, show. I feel like Stannis, the character in the books, is a harder man.
Agreed.
And not that he's not a hard man in the television show. He's not a warm and fuzzy character.
No, but he's less milk.
But George R.R. Martin, George R.R. Martin really painted him as you have this vision of this man made out of iron that just has no give at all. And he's not played quite that way, that same way on television. And in a way, it makes him a little bit more approachable and compelling, but in another way, he's less fascinating.
Well, a buddy of mine at work, I have two friends of mine at work who are both really into Game of Thrones, one of whom is like, if there was a Game of Thrones scholar, he would be it. So we bandy things back and forth quite a lot, and we've been playing a little game that we just like to call, you know, book version or show version. And we just say which one we liked better. You know, and so we bandy this back and forth, and I think we both agree we may like show Stannis a little bit more. Was that show Stannis? I don't know, but we have a lot of fun with this. Who we like better in the books, for, like show Sansa, I think is way better than book Sansa. Book Sansa drives me crazy.
Book Sansa doesn't bring a lot to the table.
No,
Book Tyrion was fantastic, but show Tyrion is fantastic.
He is, absolutely, and that goes to Peter Dinklage in a huge way. So, you know, we have a lot of fun with this. And Stannis is an interesting one. Same thing with Melisandre. I think book Melisandre may be a little bit better than show Melisandre. But, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, this is just preference and this kind of thing. I think they've done a great job of streamlining it. This episode, I think, was the most glaring example of some of the biggest changes from the book to the show.
Yes, and I think what's really happened in the last couple episodes in terms of book versus show, at least for me, is that I always, you know, I've loved the series for so long and spent so much time reading those books and watching these shows, and I always felt that the experience of the end of this story was going to come from reading. And now all of a sudden I've realized, nope, the experience of the end of the story is going to come from the television show. And then, you know, you'll read it afterwards and have whatever opinions you have about it. But the initial experience is going to be from the show.
And that's just the way that it's going. Now, one thing, we did get one email that is related to book talk here. Came in kind of late. Did you get a copy of this? Or not?
I don't know that I did.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and read it, and we'll just respond to it from this. This comes from Jacob Evans. This email is for book talk. Although it's too late, I'd love to hear your thoughts anyway. Nope, not too late. We got it in. Gracie said something during the regular discussion about High Sparrow that made me think. She was talking about how the Red Priestess and Volantis seemed to stare down Tyrion. What if the Priestess didn't recognize Tyrion as a Lannister, but instead recognize the power within him? You were talking about how Dany naturally appeals to the followers of R'hllor, given her immunity to the dragons and all. Related to that, I am more and more convinced about the T equals T theory, that Tyrion is actually half Targaryen. I also like the R plus L equals J theory. I'm less convinced of Jon Snow's true parentage, but it seems to me that he's more likely Lyanna's child than Ned's. But what if the dragon has three heads, and those three heads are all Targaryen? Dany, Jon, and Tyrion. Maybe Melisandre is less interested in Stannis and more interested in access to Jon Snow. And what if the Red Priestess and Volantis recognized Tyrion's power as a Targaryen? Maybe she wasn't interested in capturing the fugitive Lannister, but was instead impressed by the presence of Targaryen blood. Wouldn't that also explain Varys' interest in Tyrion? The descriptions of Tyrion's birth suggest that his father could have been Mad King Aerys, who had not only the sexual interest in Tywin's wife, Joanna, but the opportunity at Casterly Rock and also the motive to screw with Tywin. And we know he was fond of screwing with Tywin because he named Jaime, Tywin's heir, to the Kingsguard. Martin's book from last year, The World of Ice and Fire, goes into detail about Aerys' advances on Joanna, his mocking Tywin, and his being in Casterly Rock at about the same time of Tyrion's conception. Tyrion is described as having eyes of different colors, although he can't remember what the two colors were. Purple is distinctly Targaryen. And the Targaryens, according to The World of Ice and Fire, have a long history of grotesque birth defects, tails, wings, scales, stillborn beasts, and apparently dwarfism. And Tywin has rejected Tyrion many times as a son, although that might have just been out of anger. This would make Jaime's appointment to the Kingsguard all the worse, because it would set up Tyrion Targaryen as the Lannister heir. No wonder Tywin was pissed. Okay, now that letter touches on a bunch of stuff that I'm very happy to talk about. Let's start with R plus L equals J, which we keep dancing around. What do you think about this? Now, for those of you, I mean, if you're listening to this, you know we're talking about Rhaegar and Lyanna had a kid, and that's Jon Snow. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think it's plausible. And it certainly is a pleasing scenario. I think what we run into, since we're talking about the books, is that at least apparently Jon Snow has been killed at the end of the fifth book.
Yeah,
so it's hard to see where this leads unless that is a false alley in the book.
Well, yeah. Now, okay, let me back up and say I'm like 98% certain that that is the case, that Lyanna and Rhaegar are actually Jon's parents. As far he was stabbed multiple times. We don't yet know that he's dead by the end of the fifth book. There is also the possibility that he may have warged into something or somebody else in the meantime, because I'm fairly certain he's also a warg thanks to Lyanna. He could be a dragon warg, which, oh my God, imagine that. What would happen with that? But as far as Tyrion is concerned, yeah, I'm also completely on board with the fact that Tyrion is the child of the Mad King Aerys and Joanna Lannister. I do believe that as well. And like he said, this person is basically espousing exactly what I've completely felt about the three heads of the dragon. And my apology, I keep saying what was your name? Jacob Evans. Jacob, I completely agree with you. I think those will be the three heads of the dragon that will ride, and it will be Jon, Dany, and Tyrion.
No, and one of the things that's very most fascinating about this entire story is the bloodlines and the families and the fascination with that and the characteristics that all the families have.
Yeah.
So, you know, in many stories you would say, well, who cares, right? You know, does it make that much difference who Jon Snow's parents are? But in this one, it really does. That people carry the characteristics, or at least they're believed to carry the characteristics of their house and their family. One interesting bit about Tyrion is that he really seems to have some Lannister characteristics in terms of his cunning and his machinations, and he fits very well into that world. So that's one bit that argues a little bit more for him as a Lannister than a Targaryen. But you also could explain that away just by the fact that he grew up in that house and it's what he learned.
And he's he is half Lannister.
Yes.
Okay, so there's that. Now with Jon, we also had another interesting little hint. I mean, okay, they were hammering this home in this episode as far as the Rhaegar stuff, right? Now Stannis also made a comment about he does not believe that Jon is a bastard child because he knows Ned Stark and he knows Ned wouldn't screw some person like that.
But did that mean that Ned wouldn't mess around with a tavern wench, that he would mess around with someone classier, or that he wouldn't mess around at all?
I think the point is that he didn't mess around at all, because the last thing that Lyanna says to Ned was, promise me, before she died. So my take on that is that, you know, and then we got Dany when the houses are dying, she has the vision of her plucking the blue rose from the wall of ice. You know, it all, I don't know, all these little visions and all this stuff. I think the R plus L equals J equation is a sound one. I like the fact that it's Tyrion. I like the Jacob made a great point about the priestess and Volantis. Maybe she's seeing the Targaryen in Tyrion, not the Lannister. And Melisandre is looking for King's Blood to make another shadow baby. That would certainly be King's Blood if he was a Targaryen. So, oh, a lot of great stuff. And I feel like this episode was just forcing those of us book readers to have to address this in podcasts such as this, where we didn't want to. We don't want to address this. Come on, we're trying to avoid talking about this stuff, man. We're trying to get away from spoilers, and you're making us do it.
It was definitely, yes, it was rich in all of these areas where you're really being forced to confront the history.
It was. So I think we've pretty much covered this. Did you have anything else you want to talk about? Cool. Why don't we go ahead and we're going to let Karen out of her poop box and we'll move on with the show.
All right. Thanks, guys. So now we have next week on Game of Thrones, and nothing is very spoilery. The title of next week's episode is Kill the Boy. Don't know what that's referring to. The little blurb says, Danny makes a difficult decision in Meereen. Jon recruits the help of an unexpected ally. Brienne searches for Sansa. Theon remains under Ramsay's control. Ooh, I'm glad that they're bringing Theon back a little bit next week. I'm really looking forward to Theon and Sansa.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Locking eyes. I mean, I cannot wait.
Oh, that poor sack of shit. He really is.
Does she know that Theon is the one who killed her two youngest brothers? I mean, you know, quote unquote killed, air quotes, killed her two youngest brothers?
Yes, I believe that is exactly what she thinks happened.
Oh, boy. So the Boltons and Theon are her favorite people. And that's who she's camping with right now. Hooray.
I saw someone refer to Theon and Sansa as frenemies, which is a good way of putting it.
It's a lot heavier enemy than friend at this point, I think. Right. But, you know, I mean, but hopefully Theon will have the opportunity to be able to say, no, it wasn't me. I actually didn't kill them. They're still alive. I lost my wiener. No, you know, so maybe she'll have sympathy on the fact that he lost his wang and he really did not kill her brothers. So, you know.
It's not, you know what? That was before he was Reek, even. He's such a...
He's a total shit.
Yes, he really does deserve to have his junk missing.
I'll just say that. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. He lost in a pretty severe way. But, you know, he was actually out there to kill two of my favorite young Stark men. So, anyone...
Well, if you want to say somebody, you know, deserves to suffer, I think we can say he has suffered.
He has.
There we
suffered.
Go. Now, yeah. Ramsay, on the other hand, he's got a few things coming to him. So,
yeah, we'll see. All right. Another thing, by the way, in the scenes from next week, they showed a dragon and they showed Tyrion seeing the dragon. And I was like, yay, Tyrion's going to see the dragon and understand exactly the kind of power that Daenerys really has. So I'm looking forward to it next week.
Cool.
All right. Great. So are you guys ready to wrap up the show?
Let's do it.
All right. That's our show. Thanks for listening. And if you would like to call, you can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-JOFFREY.
You can email us at game@podcastica.com.
You can check out our website at gameofmicrophones.com.
We're also on Twitter at Podcastica and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica.
And be sure to check out the other first-class podcasts in our network at podcastica.com.
Be sure to join us next week when we cover Game of Thrones Season 5, Episode 5, Kill the Boy, with hosts Grace, David, and Jason.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
And remember, never go in against a sand snake when death is on the line.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.